This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The Department of Defense has been at work on the F-35 for 20 years. The fighter jet is supposed to be the next generation of joint strike aircraft systems for the U.S. Navy, Air Force, and the Marines. It is the most expensive weapons program in American history. Now, the F-35's lifetime operational costs are estimated to be more than $1 trillion. The Pentagon had planned to end the F-35's development phase at the end of this year and move toward full production next year. But the aircraft still has more than 900 deficiencies, some of which may threaten pilot safety. So we're going to take a look at that right now, and you can join the conversation. How do you feel about your taxpayer dollars going to the development of this jet to the tune of $1 trillion? And what's your response to the idea that the F-35 may be pushed into full production while it still has hundreds of deficiencies? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And we're joined now from Washington by Anthony Capasio, defense reporter for Bloomberg News. Tony Capasio, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for inviting me.
So first of all, give us a little bit of like the sort of the bottled history of the F-35. It's been in development for 2 decades. What's the overall goal for this new fighter system?
That's a good description you gave. Former Pentagon officials have said it's had a tragic past. Tragic, defined as causing excessive sorrow or extreme caution, and that's kind of true. The award of this thing was in October of 2001, about 3 weeks after we invaded Afghanistan. The promise was high, the most mature design ever in an aircraft. We'll have these in the field in 5 or 6 years. It'll cost about $233 billion to develop and then buy them. Now we are 19 years later. It's up to $428 billion. The plane's initial combat capabilities were about 5 to 6 years late. And while there's some light at the end of this long runway tunnel, there's still a lot of questions to be answered about future costs and reliability improvements.
Okay, so we're going to talk about all that. But I just want to know, like, ideally, this was supposed to be this state-of-the-art joint strike aircraft, right, for the Navy, the Air Force, Marines, and also for foreign militaries as well?
Right. The image was that one plane would have 80%, they would have 80% common parts. It would be a flying computer, which it is now, with 8 million lines of code. It would be able to distribute digital information at the speed of light between airplanes, Army units, Navy units, and fourth-generation fighters like the F-15 and F-16 that aren't stealthy. The reality is not there yet. They're demonstrating some nascent capabilities, but it's not 80% common parts anymore. It's much lower than that. But on the other hand, this thing is embedded in about 12 different nations around the world. Japan is buying the most. Japan, the United Kingdom, and Australia are the big, and Turkey, by the way, are the largest customers for this airplane at the moment.
How much are they willing to pay for it?
You know, that's a question the Italian parliament has grappled with, the Canadian government grappled with, and they decided not to buy any F-35s at the moment. This was about 3-4 years ago. So, yeah, questions about the plane that come out of the United States ripple through the universe.
Through the universe. Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Tony, but I just want to also ask, so the chief contractor for the F-35 was Lockheed Martin, right?
Correct.
Okay. And so let me just play a little bit of tape here, because like you said, you mentioned sorrow. And we'll get to sort of where we are now, but I want to play a moment from the late Senator John McCain and former chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee. This was in 2016 when he pointed out the then many problems with the F-35.
The F-35's program's record of performance has been both a scandal and a tragedy with respect to cost, schedule, and performance. And it's a textbook example of why this committee has placed such a high priority on reforming the broken defense acquisition system.
So late Senator John McCain in 2016. But Tony, here we are now in 2019. What are the major problems? I mean, we mentioned the 900 deficiencies with this super sophisticated airplane. What's going on?
All right. So here's some context here. It entered its full blown combat testing in December. That in itself is about 2 years late. This is the testing designed to determine whether it can go against the most sophisticated Russian and Chinese air defenses, and Iraqi air defenses for that matter, Iranian air defenses for that matter. It finishes that testing later this year or early next year, and that's going to be determining whether it's operationally capable and operationally suitable. It means it can be maintained. We don't know that yet. We know that it has emerging capabilities, and it has been used in combat a few times. It was used in combat in Afghanistan last year, Iraq, and in Syria, attacking ground targets. The deficiencies you talk about, of the 900 and roughly 15 that it went to the into the testing with, about 15 or 16 of those are what they call Category 1, the must-fix potential safety problems that right now they're flying with, working around those issues. Lockheed and the Pentagon say they have solutions for all of them, but the problem is they keep cranking these planes out. Congress keeps adding planes. The backlog and the number of planes delivered keeps growing, and those all have to be retrofitted to pay to correct these deficiencies. Those are going to be retrofitted at the cost of like $15 to $16 million million dollars a plane.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of money. So that's the to-go unfunded liability issue that this program faces. But those deficiencies, I wouldn't let the listeners think that these are flying death traps.
Okay.
That is just not true.
But what we're seeing, I mean, some of the headlines are saying that some of these deficiencies could threaten pilot safety.
Yeah, coulds and coulds. This program has had a really, frankly, a really amazing history of safety. It's had its first crash was last September. The pilot survived. He parachuted out. And then the second crash, unfortunately, the Japanese pilot who died in a crash they still don't know the reasons for, but it has not had a major history of safety issues caused by deficiencies. I need to make that point.
Okay. Oh, so that's good context then. But in a normal defense procurement and development process, though, do we reach this point? Because I understand that the Pentagon would like to push the plane into full production next year. Do we frequently reach this point with this many deficiencies, or is this kind of unusual?
Yeah, this is unusual in terms of the size and scope of the deficiencies, no question about it. But there's enormous pressure to get this plane moving. It's got 15,000 suppliers in like 45 states. Even Susan Collins in Maine, who signed out on a letter recently that the Texas delegation floated around to push the F-35, she signed on to it. I thought, why the heck would she be interested in this? She's got a Pratt & Whitney engine subcontractor in one of the towns. So the tentacles are all over the country and the world. And there's this tendency to move forward. Without Senator McCain, this program has pretty much been on autopilot as far as Congress is concerned. They keep adding planes every year.
Autopilot? And now, but I quoted a number, which you didn't say is wrong, that the lifetime... The expected lifetime cost for the F-35 program is more than $1 trillion. That's a lot of money
support.
For autopilot.
Oh, no kidding. This is the support part of it. It's $428 billion in development and procurement. Mm-hmm. On top of that is this $1.1 trillion for the next, that's like 50 years of support. But I tell you, when the number came out in early 2011, that was sticker shock magnified by 1,000%.
Huh.
That scared the heck out of a lot of people. And they're still trying to grapple with it.
Well, let's listen to what Lockheed Martin itself is saying about this, because a reporter for Defense News, Valerie Insinna, spoke with Greg Ulmer at the Paris Air Show earlier this week. Now, Ulmer is the vice president and general manager of the F-35 program for Lockheed Martin Corporation, and here's their interaction.
I'm wondering, you know, looking forward, at what point do you think that some of those are going to be able to be eliminated or downgraded? Because I know there's also a process involved there, too.
Sure. So, you know, they're each kind of, you know, we tried to address each one specifically in our response. But, you really do have to look at each one specifically. None of them are safety related.
Yeah.
Many of them already have fixes in play. It's just we have to complete the work to get them incorporated into the aircraft.
So that's Greg Ulmer, Vice President and General Manager of the F-35 program at Lockheed Martin. Tony Capasio, what's your response to Ulmer's very, I would say, calm assessment of where they are in the F-35's development?
Yeah, the calm assessment is this. GAO and others have said the Pentagon, before it goes into full rate production, the plane goes into full rate production, they need to fix the preponderance of these deficiencies or demonstrate they have a plan to quickly fix them after accelerated contracts are signed. We've heard this tune before, but going into testing with like 916 deficiencies, 15 of those being Category 1, not a good thing. This is why you need Congress to aggressively oversee the program. Right now, you got the General Accounting Office who comes out with a report once a year. You got the Pentagon's Test Office that comes out with a report once a year. There's a flurry of news stories, and then it kind of dies. So now it's up to the Pentagon bureaucracy, the Air Force, Navy, and Marines, to aggressively ensure that there's a plan forward, especially to fix the Category 1 deficiencies.
Right. And I mean, certainly they would be motivated to do that, right? Because this is the weapon systems that they will be using, that their soldiers will be operating. I mean, they must be motivated to be sure that these Category 1 deficiencies get worked out.
Clearly. No, they definitely. And in fact, the new Marine Corps Commandant is their former head of their buying command. He's very well aware of the issues with the B model. It's the one that can fly. It can land vertically. Okay. This has been the most problematic of the versions. It's the most complicated of the airplanes. And the prior Marine Corps commandants have been really hands-on. The new one is going to be even more hands-on. So, yeah, I'm confident that especially the Category 1 deficiencies, either they'll solve by or at least have a great plan forward, a plan forward that shows solutions fairly soon next year.
Well, let's take a couple of calls here. Zach is calling from Bradenton, Florida. Zach, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Go ahead.
Are you there?
Yeah, go
Hello?
Ahead. Hmm? Yeah, we're still with you, Zach. Go ahead.
Hey, awesome. Hey, I've got so many comments. I don't even know where to begin. So, I'm a former Army Ranger with the United States military, and I have had some time around the F-35 and kind of seen a little bit of what it can do and what it can't do. Now, what I have come into contact with, and especially seen, is that there's huge problems with this vertical landing, vertical takeoff, landing and takeoff platform, where basically the prop behind the turbine prop behind the cockpit that's actually used for the stabilization and the main thrust for this vertical landing, vertical takeoff is yet to be fully bugged out. This is an ongoing problem they've had since, I believe, since 2007 or 2008 when they first tried to put this aircraft on an aircraft carrier to actually see if it actually can do what the Harrier, which we already have in service, already can do. And I kind of feel like there's already weapons platforms, aerial weapons platforms, as far as like maybe, you know, the F-35 or maybe the F-18, for example, where it's what's the real advantage for this F-35? Where is all this money really? Why is there such a support to want to get this project going? And I feel like that this is really an outdated technology at this point to throw a lot of large money of tax dollars at. So what I feel like is just going to be shipped to other countries so they have an inferior air defense system that is going to be something that we have already have a trump to in place of that's already 20-year-old technology.
Right.
So I guess what I'm saying is this really a primary example of us kind of using a weapons platform to say, look how great this thing is, vertical landing, vertical takeoff, which that's yet to be fully bugged out. And then in the same breath, are we just using this to sell to other people so that we still maintain air defense superiority?
Right. Well, Zach, thank you so much for your call. Zach, a former Army Ranger there who's worked on the F-35. Mm-hmm. Tony Capasio, he's said a lot there. Let's kind of start in the middle with what he said, because I'm curious about, he asked, like, what is actually sort of the operational superiority of the F-35 versus systems that the U.S. military already has?
Okay, it's the stealth capability and the sensors and the onboard computers that this is a promise yet to be totally realized. So the idea is it's a flying quarterback able to call audibles and then call also specific plays, but send out information to other non-stealthy fighters and to the ground, to ground units, to Ranger units, special ops units, which Rangers are also, but conventional units. That hasn't been fully demonstrated yet. the F-35 and the F-22, our other stealthy fighter, they can't really talk to each other in terms of yet linking sophisticated data between the two. That's a real problem they need to fix. He said something interesting about the technology already being outmoded. Well, there's another upgrade for this program called the Block 4. It's about $28 billion, we're learning, and this is going to be going forward. Planes already built now are going to have to be modified with Block 4 dollars. This program raises all sorts of problems in terms of cost, schedule, performance, and whether Lockheed has got the engineering support that can even support this new upgrade. So that's lurking out there. The Ranger Zach made a good point about the technology. Is it already outmoded? And then the issue of ground support. This was originally sold as being able to provide ground support, close air support for guys and women on the ground. And that's still to be determined.
Yeah.
The attacks in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria, those are ground attacks on ISIS and Taliban units. There's war not in support of U.S. troops.
Well, we have one last question here. We've just got about 30 seconds left to go, Tony. But Amy Bradley says, considering the entire process related to this aircraft, the question shouldn't be why is it being pushed into production, but rather why has it not been canceled? And why has the bidding process not been completely reworked?
It's too big to fail. This has been a trite label hung on it, but I've been covering this since the day it was awarded, and I've kind of come to that conclusion. There's too many players with vested interests. There's too many people that want this to succeed, and I think it will succeed eventually, but the question is at what cost and what opportunity cost for other programs. It's competing with Marine Corps programs, two new submarine programs the Navy's pushing. So
too big.
That's the challenge.
Yeah. Well, Anthony Capasio, defense reporter for Bloomberg News, it was great talking with you. Thank you so very much.
Great. And thank you for having me on. I hope I was able to illuminate this a little bit.
Most certainly were. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.